Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, April 27th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Please visit LL Research websites, llresearch.org, which is home to 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, and chat rooms regarding the study of the Law of One. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. Carla, are you with us?
I am. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm doing good. It's been an interesting week, and you might just hear the ice cream truck in the background. There's an ice cream truck outside right by my house.
Doesn't that bring childhood back?
Yeah,
it keeps you wondering about banana popsicles when I was a kid. I used to just beg and beg for a dime so we could I could go out and give the guy my dime and get a banana popsicle.
Yeah,
that was wonderful.
That we used to go to, but we didn't have ice cream trucks when I was a kid, at least not in my city.
Oh,
but
gosh. Yeah.
So that's just
I'm a post-World War II baby. And right after the war when everybody was having kids, you know, the post-war boom, I'm a boomer, and they had everything for young kids, you know. It was everything that would sell. I'm way back there, you know, in the late 60s now, so my childhood included things like coonskin caps and hula hoops and Elvis and the Beatles, you know. They were young when I was young. So it's a good time to be young, and it's been an interesting career through life. I certainly am nowhere near where I started. And Jim is coming on the phone now.
Oh, I was going to ask you if Jim's going to join us today. Jim, hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you tonight?
Doing good. Well, our sound effects went away. I guess the ice cream truck went down the street, so I thought I'd mention that just in case. Well, good. I'm glad you guys are doing good, and I'm glad you're joining us, Jim. We definitely enjoy having you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
Great. Fantastic. Well, I am going to start with our opening riff for tonight, which is from Session 16 regarding the Ten Commandments. This is Session 16, Question 15. Questioner, can you tell me the origin of the Ten Commandments? I am Ra. The origin of these commandments follows the law of negative entities impressing information upon positively oriented mind-body-spirit complexes. The information attempted to copy or ape positivity while retaining negative characteristics. Questioner, was this done by the Orion Group? I am Ra. This is correct. Questioner, what was their purpose in doing this? I am Ra. The purpose of the Orion Group, as mentioned before, is conquest and enslavement. This is done by finding and establishing an elite and causing others to serve the elite through various devices, such as the laws you mentioned and others given by this entity. Questioner, was the recipient of the commandments positively or negatively oriented? Ra, the recipient was one of extreme positivity, thus accounting for some of the pseudo-positive characteristics of the information received.
Thanks, Monica. I picked this one because of just happening to be at the outskirts of a couple of conversations who the conversations had to do with the difficulties people had in dealing with their childhood religion. And I thought that this little set of questions about the Ten Commandments shows you exactly how close to the beginning of the development of the positivity of such world religions the negativity creeps in. It doesn't take but just a little bit of power and people get interested. And they discover not only does good advice about smart choices make for people trusting you and looking up to you, but it gives you a power over other people if they believe that what you say is absolutely so. Say that the Catholic, Baptist, or whatever, what the Christian or any other world religion type that goes to a church where you have to believe a bunch of dogma like the Ten Commandments. Nothing against the Ten Commandments. There's nothing there that I would disagree with. It's just that it's not inspiring. When they say the pseudo-positive characteristics of the information received, they're talking about the form of the commandments. Thou shalt not. A positive statement would be not thou shalt not kill, but thou shalt support life, support and sustain life. Instead of thou shalt not commit adultery, you say thou shalt remain divinely in love with your one true companion. You know, it would tell you positive things to do. It would tell you in the same way, get the same point across, but you wouldn't have this terrible guilt of, well, I shouldn't do that, and I shouldn't do that. And it just sort of draws you to it, just like Adam and Eve were drawn to the snake's apple. If you're told you shouldn't do something, it's the very thing that you really start thinking about doing because you just don't like to be told no. And so people don't even remember that. Can you say all the Ten Commandments, Jim? Could you? Monica, could you?
Oh, I can. I went to Catholic school. they're indelibly imprinted on my mind.
Okay, well, I have never memorized them, but I'm only Episcopalian. We do row the boat to shore better, though. We bring it right up on the shore and into the trees, Michael. we're really good for stuff like that. Anyway, we burden our children, and I'm going to talk about this when we get to another question, by giving them rules without explanation or background or anything except, okay, here's a list of stuff to do. Here's a list of stuff not to do. Do the stuff that you're supposed to do. Don't do the other stuff. Nobody says why. Nobody gives you a guiding principle, an ethic. And it isn't part of a daily system of, you know, consciously spiritual development for anybody. It's just, okay, there's another day I've got to get through. And you know, and I won't commit murder, and I won't commit adultery, and I won't say anything bad to my parents, and I'll worship the Lord God only, and all that other stuff. Okay. But doesn't it feel better just to be loved and to love the Lord back? And that is where the saving grace comes in of positivity. And when you spot people telling you what to do, beware, because seldom are they truly interested in your unique situation. Rather, they are interested in forming you as they believe people should be made. And that is a totally individual decision. So I just want to encourage people, if they feel a little guilty for even disliking the Ten Commandments, don't. If it pleases you, and if you want to look deeper into the good aspect of those suggestions for ethical behavior, rewrite them so they're positive. and you will be describing how you would like yourself to act, say, in the next density, where all the cards are on the table, everybody knows everything, and nobody has an edge or wants one. Nobody puts on a mask or needs one. All of these, and Monica, you have a ton of information in your head if you've been through that whole Catholic training. That's huge. That, what do they call it?
For it? Catechism?
Catechism, yeah. It just goes on and on and on.
I think I've forgotten most of it. I probably am a little rusty. I think I've blocked it out.
Well, I think at a certain point, it's kind of fun to take on those questions for the first time. It feels kind of exciting. If somebody will take a child in that situation, usually 11, 12, 13, and show the person, isn't this exciting to think about this? You know, this is what this part of life is. This is the kind of thing it considers. Isn't it exciting to consider what happens for all eternity? Isn't it exciting to try to figure out what is good and what is right? And, you know, get a person interested in doing it his way, but a good way. You know, instead of just saying, do it this way. That's the way you're supposed to do it. And why? Because I say so. Because the Bible says so. You know, those are not answers. The answers need to come from inside. It needs to be subjective. You need to feel that this is the way you want to act and you know, go to it because you want to, not because you have to. That's no fun at all.
Exactly. And not only that, but we were taught that if we didn't believe a certain way or if we did those bad things, you know, there were certain unforgivable sins, and the different religions have different versions of that. You know, the newer ones, you know, it's like if you don't believe in a certain way, then you're going to hell and you're going to burn forever, you know. So it was this fear thing that was projected on.
Yeah, it's quite an odd feeling to be approached by a member of your own family. And I had this happen for a long time. My brother was just so concerned that I was going to hell. And he begged me to stop channeling because it was, you know, it was on him. The Lord had put it on him to bring me back to the fold. And, of course, I felt very positively that the Lord had called me to do this, that that's why I'm here. And everything in my life has moved along the lines that would indicate that I've got hold of something, because it's grown and grown and people appreciate the work. So obviously this is something that I have to take within. I can't ask somebody else to judge it. And if I were still stuck in things like the Ten Commandments, I don't think that I could have withstood all of my brother's criticism during all those years. But it's the funniest thing to hear somebody, your loved one, you know, you held him as a baby, you fed him milk, you know. I was 14 years old when my brother was born, so of course I was the babysitter, and I babysat my way through his childhood until I got married. So, you know, I'm this is my little baby, and he's telling me that I'm going to hell. It's always been a hard one. And it took years for us to work this out so that we could live on the same planet and not have that conversation endlessly, you know, because Tommy's pretty stubborn. And needless to say, if I feel that I'm doing the right thing, you're probably not going to get me to change. So it was like 23 years this went on before I finally proactively drew a boundary and said, I'll be seeing you. And I just wouldn't see him anymore. I didn't want to take the abuse. And after a couple of years, he had an enlightenment, realized that he didn't have to do that for me. He could be my brother and let it go at that. It was a wonderful change. And I felt so lucky and grateful.
That's beautiful that you were able to work that out with him, because I know so many families, it breaks up the family.
It really can. But my brother, I'll give it to my brother, he thinks about things more than a lot of people do. And he said to me last year, wasn't it, Jim? He says, do you suppose, he said, the prophets, he said, they were channeling, weren't they?
Right. That's what he said.
Yeah. So finally, you know, and I thought, oh, my goodness. And I said, yeah, you know, I kind of think that's exactly what was happening. So we've come a lot closer, and it's possible to live after the Ten Commandments, but it does make it a little bit harder to be totally spontaneous and open in your love. And I think that if you would rewrite the Ten Commandments, and it would be all about love.
I remember many years ago I took a class in creative visualization and, you know, positive thinking, affirmations, that sort of thing. And I remember one of the things she taught us, she said, you know, people say, oh, don't forget to do this and don't forget to do that. She says, no, don't. Here she said it. She said, don't say don't. Say. I just caught that. She said, remember, you know, say remember. Remember to do this. Remember to do that. And so when my child was little, I would always tell him, remember this, remember that. And I tried to instill that, you know, to look at something in a positive way instead of the negative. Because she said, well, if you're focusing on the negative, that's what you're going to attract to you anyway. Even if you're trying to not have that, you're going to attract it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that makes sense. So a positive version of the Ten Commandments rather than what not to do. And then there's the fear component as well, the controlling aspect. So do you think that, can you talk a little bit about what Ra mentioned about this coming from the Orion group, for those who might not be aware of that?
Okay. Yeah, and this is a good chance to talk about a characteristic of the way that I offer suggestions a lot. I offer suggestions from a lifetime of study of materials that are off the beaten walk, and yet they make total sense to me. I've been around them a long time, and the problem with all of that is not that I don't make sense if you listen to me and if you accept the definitions of the words I use and, you know, stick with me for 5 minutes, it begins to be a profitable thing to do. But it can sound like I'm a cultist or that I'm totally stopped up with occult information that doesn't have much to do with anything because of all the different terms like mind-body-spirit complex for a person and the way of saying, calling everything a distortion, you know, getting into our concept of what is real and what is an illusion. And so I end up talking about chakras and what happens with each chakra and how we work with each chakra. And I've had a couple of people say, you know, or actually the one that was just hit it on the head. Some guy wrote in, I don't know if it was a man or a woman because of the avatar names that people use. And he said, I think that, let's see, what was it he said? I've lost my point because I can't remember what he said anyway. Anyway, he said, I feel like, oh, I got it now. It was sort of off the wall, so I'm having trouble putting it back together. He said, when I was listening to you, he said, and I suddenly realized, number one, it sounds like pop culture at its worst, you know, a lot of odd terms and stuff. He said, number two, I realized I was following along and agreeing with everything you said. So it made me realize that maybe I was ready to join the forums and make posts because you are making sense, actually. And that is a characteristic of my way of offering advice is in trying to reach beyond the walls that are put up by people who are trying to do things by rules that, you know, are dogmatic. I'm trying to help other people discover and use a system of evaluation of life and what is happening to us as the moments continue throughout the lifetime. You know, what's happening to us, how we deal with it, how we can be most skillful and how we can do the most good and you know, get her done. We came here to work hard and, you know, we're ready for it. A lot of times we don't know precisely what to do. So if I sound like I'm a little bit off with all of this chakra stuff, I really have learned a system of thinking about the energy that comes into our body that is an earth energy, things that lie beyond the veil, shall we say, our consciousness, love, all the ideals. I found, you know, a way of, you know, just by channeling it, of putting all this into one big barn, a barn that instead of limiting you, it just shelters you. It gives you a structure. Okay, this is the universe. This is how the universe works. This is where you are. This is where you've been. This is where you're going. But they don't call it names where you make judgments and say who failed and who did great and anything like that. They're just talking about the evolution of mind, body, and spirit. I've done the best I can in writing to clear out the jargon and speak regular English to people. But to deal with the raw material, you do have to use the vocabulary that they use, because they make things mean something different by the way they say them. And so to people who want to study that, who find that helpful, then, I need to be true to that. Anyway, now I've forgotten the question that you asked me.
Oh, I was so busy
trying to explain why I had so many, I'm aware that I say a lot of things like chakra and so forth that make people take maybe out of their comfort zone a little bit. But it is the way that I have found to make sense of life and to have a good time at it. So, something I want to share if I can, if it would help people.
Well, I think it's definitely helping people. No question about that.
Now, back to the question, because I was totally digressing the whole time. So could I regress?
I got it. That's okay. That was all good, but I do have the question. And that was, Ra mentioned something about that the Ten Commandments did come from a negative influence from the Orion.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's what triggered it, is the Orion Confederation or the Orion Empire. When they called it that, if I'm not mistaken, Jim, and you correct me, you're the scholar, they explained in the first time they ever called it the Empire, they said, we call it one of your names so that you will understand that it's for fighting men. That's the nature of it, is armed. Do you remember that? They're talking about why they called it the Orion Empire.
Their purpose in being here is conquest and enslavement.
Yeah.
And they're not all unified in their effort. there are other negative entities as well that are competing and have been. If you read the Old Testament, you see how the Lord God is always punishing his people for not doing what he says. And then after a while of being punished, then he brings them back and gives them their land or something to reward them. It's a constant carrot and stick approach. But there are various names given to the Orion entities, the negative entities, and I believe there was quite a war of false gods at that time, and I believe that's a battle that is continuing. And it's something that we have to remember, that when an entity attempts to control another's behavior, that's the negative principle in practice, and that so many books of the Old Testament especially show how this type of control of a people is implemented through, as Carla said, various channels, and especially in Ezekiel. If you read Ezekiel, it's constantly being said, now the Lord God tells Ezekiel, tell the people this, thus says the Lord.
Then they will know that I am Lord.
There's any doubt about what's going on here. They're continuing to punish and reward in order to enslave the people to do exactly as they are told. So, yeah, it's a warring type of effort, and it's a battle, I believe that Ra called it the Battle of Armageddon, that was undertaken some 3,300 years ago, and which I believe continues to this day.
Yes, it does. The problem is that there is a shift, a tremendous shift from third through the sixth density. Third and the very first part of fourth density is still fairly convinced that you have to fight to win, even if the Lord is on your side. In other words, you do have to resist evil, in spite of the fact that Jesus, who had a higher source of information, said very clearly, resist not evil. Very difficult to live by not resisting evil. You want to get up on your horse and slap somebody silly if he's being bad. And if he's being bad to your tribe, your nation state, your resources, whatever, you feel that he needs to be controlled and manipulated. So anybody that wants to be defensive and be, governing in the way America seems to want to do it, inevitably ends up being service to self in the energy that they put out there, because they're trying to shape events in order to benefit the nation state of the United States of America. And the question isn't, is it okay to do that? It's okay within certain bounds as defined by international law. We break international law regularly. We get around it, under it, you know, and manage to manipulate things to change countries, to destabilize countries, in order for American interests to be helped. And it's really too bad. So that's the basic state of things in third density still, and we haven't been able to shake it off. And in early fourth density, many still believe that all should be given for love, and that by identifying that with a life, they fear I must become a martyr in order to live the highest life. But as you gradually see things from a new light, literally from the light of the various densities, the light changes as you go. You keep being able to see more in that ever-changing light. You see more and more, and your old solutions seem simplistic and unacceptably skewed. And so you begin changing as you would naturally in a school of evolution. You begin going for the talk instead of the fight. You begin using persuasion instead of aggression. And you end up with everybody helping everybody and everybody having enough. That's where the people that want freedom, justice, and equality and so forth in this world are really going. That's the energy that they're looking for. But the problem is you sort of think, well, if I could control everything, then I could make this happen. And that's one step too far. We all have to want something like that for it to happen. You can't legislate good. But I'm very glad to say that this war between good and evil peters out because of the fact that people keep maturing spiritually and saying, no, I don't need to do this anymore. It's not necessary. Evil will go its own way without the need for this. And so they retire from the list. However, there is always a new supply of early fourth density people that may feel, you know, for a while, until they gain more experience, that they need to fight. They still need to keep fighting. I think some of the hardest questions that we ever hit in this life have to do with war, because of the fact that you're there for a positive purpose, to protect the innocent women and children at home. However, it involves killing people. It's difficult to see both sides of that one.
Well, especially since most of the wars now are political. You know, it's political. It's not.
You know, and people call you on that and say, "Well, how do you know that?" And so then you say something smart, like I've heard, "Who was that guy on the Amy Goodman show, Jim, that said he was Robert somebody from the British press?" He said, "Now, I've been in the Middle East for 35 years, and let's face it," he said, "if Iran's leading export were asparagus, we would not be there." I don't remember his name, do you?
No.
But it was a marvelous quote. He writes for two or three magazines in Britain, and has a wonderful jocular way about him, knows his business. Anyway, yes, negativity continues, but in the grand scheme of things, we will eventually get tired of distorting ourselves in the particular fashions that involve us in war, and we will, you know, evolve. It will happen. The question is only about a speed. How will it happen? How quickly will it happen? Because we can go very slowly if we want to.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can pick up and really, really buzz and really pack in some experiencing, some witnessing. I think it's, you know, real important to encourage people to just go for the intensity and the experiences of life. Not glossing over the moment because you're so busy thinking about tomorrow or what your plans are. You know, it's so good to really focus in on and appreciate, you know, the moment and being able to do what you can do for people right then, right there, that moment that'll never happen again.
Okay. We have got a few questions. Let's see. One of them actually is a little bit related to what you just said, so I'm going to go ahead and go to this question next from God Wide Void. And he says, perhaps you could ask for, well, he's saying to me, ask Carla for clarification upon the two modes of STS that one may extract from advanced understanding. STS, as it arises from the material illusion in which the entity seeks to gratify the temporary self-created personality at the expense of others, valuing only the self, and seeking through manipulation, selfish drives, and cunning to obtain power and glory for the self, even if it entails that another might lose something. And STS, as is seen from the lens of absolute unity, in which it is completely understood and felt that the self within oneself and the self within others is the ever-waiting, calm, perpetually observant essence of the one infinite creator. As such, when an individual entity performs acts of any kind, be they compassionate attempts at service or underhanded negative actions, it is the creator whom you interact with. Thus, when that individualized aspect of the creator were to serve another, the creator would be aware of this, and thus it would seem that good karma is facilitated in which future acts of kindness are performed unto the being. In this way, serving others, creator, entails the self, creator, ending up in circumstances seen as positive or beneficial, i.e. being served.
Okay. I think that more people have struggled over the paradox of service to self and service to others than any other issue involved in Ra's take on cosmology. It just drives you crazy to think about it. It's a complete paradox. How can you be of service to somebody else without being service to yourself if we are all one? It's a drop-dead answer. Obviously, you can't. You have to be of service to yourself. I think that when people ask questions like this, they're turning one step away from making common sense in order to be able to show the inherent paradox of the law, and thereby suggest possibly that the law, you know, of polarity doesn't work or isn't right. Well, it works, and it's right for here. And that's where we are. And I know that some of the early troubles I had in my life were because I didn't want to live third density. I didn't want to become part of the planet. I thought it was kind of a tacky place. And I thought, well, ick. Ew. I think I'll just stay in my little room. Read books, oof, do my homework, listen to music. Peggy Lee, talk to me, please. The world is too much with me. So I tended to be ivory tower bound by my very nature, which is dreamy and mystical. And by the things that I tended to study, I was a singer. I loved to study folk singing, and I went very deeply into it, actually. When I had some sick times as a kid, months at a time I was in bed. And so I'd lie in bed and collect songs, you know. So I was very serious about all that and greatly enjoyed that. But funny, I don't use the singing now except when I teach in public. Oh well. But I can only say about service to self is that it does no good to claim sixth density point of view and make it work here. And one very excellent psychic said tersely to me years and years ago, you are trying to run a third density body on sixth density electrical energy. You have got to be born into this planet. You never have accepted it. And so I spent some time really grounding myself into the planet, and I suspect that this illness that I have, and, you know, going very down deeply into the very basic clinical non-interesting parts of taking care of a body and doing the intimate things that you need to do to make it clean and sanitary is something that I have needed to devote myself to say, yes, I am worth it. My body, my limited third density body is wonderful, and I need to love it, and I need to do this work here. And I pray every morning, you know, please help me to serve in this density, you know, because I really need to love it, to accept it, and to be completely dedicated to the work that I came to do, which is simply to bear witness to the light that flows through. And, you know, service to self is going to continue to befuddle people because it's a genuine and unsolvable paradox. It's your point of view that matters. And I think it's very helpful to understand the progression from third to fourth to fifth to sixth, the progression from that point where we are in boot camp and working hard just to get our body in shape, our mind in shape, our spirituality in shape to make that first basic choice of service to others, and then gradually, you know, becoming harvestable positively and being able to serve others in so many different ways and learn more things, and then gradually discover that although love is wonderful, we need to graduate into the light that shows us more wisdom so that the love in our hearts can be modified, just as an adjective would modify a noun, by wisdom. So you go through the fifth density and all of the lessons of wisdom that you learn because of the way the light gives you information in that density. And finally, you have wisdom as well as love in your arsenal, and you know how to use both resources. And where are you then? You're looking at sixth density graduation so that you can go into sixth density and be part of the density of unity, where unity, you know, combines the wisdom and the love, so that you have wise love or loving wisdom, compassion. That's a very, you know, grand sweep of change and the way change happens to us all. And it's the way change was designed to happen here in our creation, I think. So it's a service to self's grip on us will gradually loosen because of the fact that we can see more, because we can see more than that. We can see around that. We can see space in that. And therefore, we do not have to defend. We have only to love. Jim, am I saying it? You have a way that you could say it more clearly? Or?
Well, I look at it as a way of determining how we wish to be of service to the Creator. If you look at the purpose of creation as helping the Creator to know itself, and each of us is a portion of the Creator partaking in that experience, then the more we choose to be either of service to self or of service to others, the more powerful we make that choice, then the more vivid, the more powerful, and the more varied are our experiences that we obtain because of that choice, the experiences that wouldn't be possible if we hadn't made that choice and made it with firmness and really followed it through and became more polarized positively or negatively. Things that are possible with that choice then are services and experiences for the Creator to know itself that really do enrich the Creator's knowledge of itself. If we decided not to make those choices, well, there's still nothing wrong with that. It's just that it doesn't serve the Creator as much as it would if we make those polarizing choices one way or the other.
I think this is really, really timely that these questions came up, because the next question is very much related to what you're talking about, and I think you've already answered it to a great degree, but I'm going to go ahead and read it anyway. It's a very short question from Patrick. Patrick says, "Could perhaps Carla could expound upon what she talked about a couple of weeks ago, that there is no right and wrong in 6D, but there is in 3D, and it is our task to choose between them. I feel that everything is probably just a question of intentions when it comes to right and wrong. It's very subjective, at least in 3D. But yes, I'd like to know what Carla has to say about this. And Jim, too, I'm sure. But so what I'm hearing you both of you say is that really it's all about the choice in 3D. And my question, in addition to what Patrick's asking, I'm kind of asking the same thing, is if we focus so much on unity or what we think is unity while we're here in 3D, could we actually miss making the very choices that we actually intended to make in order to polarize?
Probably not, because of the inference, the direct inference that you would take from making that choice, you know, that you must be making it because, you know.
You mean like no choice is a choice?
Well, no, I mean like looking at everything as being of unity is going to throw you into, say, re-identify your situation on the basis of unity. You say, now, wait a minute, I believe in unity and I'm having this situation, so what's actually happening? And if you try to make it work, if you try to make reality work, you know, what's happening to you, what you see, incoming, you try to make the incoming make sense. You know, you have to listen carefully to what's going on and also listen to your insides so that you can sort of identify, okay, what's the issue, where are we, you know, and how could I respond?
Okay,
I don't think that saying that all is one is at all going to give you the same results as saying, you know, we need to love the good and hate the bad. I'm saying that a person who thinks that all things are one would tend to act as if he were of service to others because of the fact that he believes in unity. But people that give lip service to a principle like unity are not necessarily in their minds allowing that principle to plummet into the depths of the unconscious mind and to make it vibrate in such a way as they understand what they're perceiving. You know, people don't tend to think that hard. They see, well, let's look at the way you and I walk down the street. And let's look at the way an artist walks down the street. Well, have you seen those pictures artists draw on the sidewalk where suddenly, instead of a sidewalk, there's 3D and you're looking down or up or sideways? Or how do they do that? I don't know. It's all, you know, done with smoke and mirrors and optical illusions, but they can actually paint things and make it look like you're seeing something that isn't there at all. It's just two-dimensional, but from a distance, it looks real. So I think that unless you allow things to hurt you, unless you allow yourself to be vulnerable, unless you are not very well defended, not completely defended, life won't actually get at you and you won't actually learn anything. So, you know, it's a very good resource to allow yourself to be touched by life. That it's okay, you know, to feel down or to feel joyful or to feel destroyed or to feel distraught or anything like that. It all passes, but it's all good information and it's all worth paying attention to.
So what I'm hearing you say is it would depend on whether you've really you're really allowing that concept of unity to affect your choices versus just giving lip service to it and just having the attitude of, doesn't matter what I choose because, it's all
is one.
You know, all is one and 60 anyway. Right.
And it will, but not thanks to you. Not if you think like that.
Okay.
Need to encourage people to stay on third density until we get through with it. We're not done with it yet. We're almost done with it. Not quite.
Okay.
Well, I look forward to next. I do want to do a good job this time.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next question from Plenum. Hi, Carla. Would it be possible for you to talk a little bit about the topic of spiritual pride? What exactly is it? How do you deal with it? And how does it appear in one's spiritual journey? Thank you.
Hey, Plenum. It's good to hear from you. I like to work with your questions. I went and looked around for something that I could share with you that would bring you to a place where I hadn't yet been, because I think that in thinking about spiritual pride, there's you just sort of have to, you know, you have to just find your point of attack and get into it, because once you get into it, it's a big subject. But basically, in a contact that we had on March 1st, 1998, the Quo group said, the human, hang on, I'm losing my microphone. Okay, sorry for the noise. Me and technology never did get along well. Okay, here we go. Quo, 1998, the human state itself is the basis of pride. For it seems to each human without recourse to any physical evidence that she is alone, that the walls of skin surround the self and cut it off from oneness with all else that there is. And why does this separation cause spiritual pride? Because we don't know what the other person is going through. We don't know how we're coming across to them. We are sort of in prison walls all our life, in that the walls of flesh keep us from awareness of what other people are thinking. And for some reason, people worry about what other people are thinking. I'm scrambling just to keep up with what I'm thinking. But I think people really are. They love to gossip. They love to have the buzz. They love to know what's going on with everybody. And, you know, they sort of look at each other as from one mountaintop to another, with this great separation between all beings, as if we were all sort of monads, you know, these individual, you know, units of being or consciousness or humanity. They're sort of bouncing around like little cubes in a very surrealistic 50s landscape created by Sartre. And that's the way it sometimes does feel. I mean, when you really get into your solitariness and the fact that you're alone within that skin and people can't read your thoughts, they don't know what you're thinking, they may not have sympathy for you or anything that they can do for you simply because they don't know you well enough, and they don't want to take the trouble to come out of their comfort zone and to get to know you well enough and to create new things. At any rate, spiritual pride is simply a feeling that you have a goodness to you that maybe other people don't have spiritually. I'd like to read you another couple of places in this session that I thought were extremely good. He says, the infant slowly realizes that some of its needs will not be met. It begins to realize that some things can be hurtful and does not wish to repeat experiences of pain. And so the walls begin to go up around the young heart. Don't touch the stove. Don't pat the cat. Don't pick up the dog. Don't. As a child grows, it learns how to defend the self. It experiments with ways of relating to other selves and, except in very unusual situations, by the time this entity is considered a mature adult by the surrounding society, this entity has become one, to some extent, controlled by fear. We change from pride to fear because the one known as Jay, the questioner at the time, was asking which was the ultimate catalyst to be dealt with within third density. And we would respond in general that the only catalyst dealt with in third density is fear and love. The entity begins its babyhood wrapped in love. Reminds me of Wordsworth's Intimations of Mortality from Memories as a Young Child. I can't remember the title of it exactly, but I love that poem. Anyway, begins its babyhood wrapped in love, love known throughout the system, and it learns to close itself, to become a part, and to become defended, because it seems fairly obvious that there are things to fear. There are entities and objects out there that can harm and hurt. So the spiritual life within third density may be described as either a learning how to love or a learning of how to release fear. For fear is that distortion of love that posits a separation between beings and things, thus occasioning the necessity of having some sort of response to these persons or things that will tend to increase safety and comfort. And finally, the last quotation from this session I would like to offer is this one. As long as you think that you have a self that you need to defend, you shall be working with spiritual pride. And so entities, for the most part, are working with this no matter how persistently and purely and devotionally they have sought year after year. Yet still there is a sense of I am searching, I am looking, I am seeking to become the best that I can. Conversely, we have found that coming into a fuller awareness of self is actually a process of subtraction, simplification, and elimination of things from the defended self, until finally the self is empty and the barriers are down. Is this safe to do within your density? No, not at all. Not in the sense of the preservation of the physical body, the emotional body, or the spiritual body within incarnation. So obviously, the deck is stacked against us proceeding too far, too fast, because our very nature gets in the way. So we spend our lifetimes working our way through these long, long lessons.
Okay, well, that was a lot of good information there, Carla. Thank you. I think he's got a good answer there. We just have a few minutes.
I think, you know, it will help Planema if he or she is able to go and read that whole session. Obviously, you can't just rip something off like that and it'd be fairly dense material and then have it sort of sink in. But I think that was enough to interest Planema in you know, looking up the sessions since they're all free and you know, you can be seen on site. So you just look it up by the date. And I found my mind going in all kinds of good directions from reading that session. So you might enjoy it too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I want everybody to know you can read these transcripts at llresearch.org. It's all available for free download. And you can also get a hard copy of the Law of One books at llresearch.org. We have just a few minutes left, and I'm going to ask there's actually a couple of questions from God Wide Void, and we're going to do part two of the question, and we'll save part one for next week when we have more time. Part two is, I'm under the assumption that Carla channels Kuo or some other higher density being when she answers the questions on the show. Is this correct?
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up because I think that it gives me a chance to say something about the channeling process that obviously is not always understood. There are two kinds of, there are many kinds of channelings, but for me, I channel, I guess, three different ways. One is the channeling I do from moment to moment, all day, every day. That is definitely a partially channeled experience. sometimes I'm channeling my mother, sometimes I'm channeling the angels that I'm dealing with in my unseen thoughts. Sometimes I'm channeling some aspect of myself that either wants to get things done or has some characteristic that has gotten all blown out of comparison with other things. But now I just totally fluffed off, and the question was...
Are you channeling when you're answering?
That's right. I'm sorry. I just got myself all wound up. I was undoing my telephone cord and thinking, oh, my God, I hope I don't take the telephone apart. Having done that, I forgot what I was going to say. So that's one form of channeling. I think that's everybody's doing that much channeling. You know, the voice is within us. And it's good to know that and get beyond that. Another kind of channeling that I do, I work for very hard. I spend somewhere between 10 minutes and a half hour singing hymns, saying prayers, meditating, talking to my guidance, creating a workroom, getting all set up for session, and then carefully and repeatedly challenging any spirit that offers to speak so that I tune, I challenge. I take a tremendous amount of time, and I take it very, very, very seriously because I know other people are going to look at it. So I really have to be doing my best. Channeling is a very iffy thing. And all you can do is your best. So, you know, I'm very focused. I'm very in an altered state. Not that it looks that way, but that I've worked within to get there. Now, the way I'm tuned tonight, I spend some time with the Holy Spirit. Now, I call her Holly because I think that calling a friend of yours the Holy Spirit kind of, you know, puts distance between you that Holly wouldn't want there. And I have my own little flame of the Holy Spirit, just as everyone else does if they want it. I accept it, I take it, and I work with it. I have an ongoing conversation with Holly that fills my days and nights, and she's always there, closer than my breathing. So it's a matter of which channeling I do. And when I'm answering these questions, I may use a lot of Ra speak. I may use a lot of the terms in Ra's glossary because it's very helpful for me to get my sense across that way. But the guidance that I'm using is from a Christian source. And you could call it Sophia, you could call it Kuan Yin. It's that wonderful feminine energy that heals and makes people feel safe and loves everybody. So that's my guidance, Holly. God bless Holly. I've actually published Holly. That Book of Days is a, a book of short readings where I was channeling Holly for just a bit. I was practicing the tuning, the challenging, and so forth. And Jim would put the tape recorder on at the end of our morning offering, and I would go through all the process of tuning and challenging. I'd get Holly on the horn, and I'd just ask her for a thought for the day, you know, because it's kind of rude to get somebody on the phone and then say, okay, wanted to talk to you, bye. So I say, hey, I'm just practicing my channeling. Could you give us a thought for the day? And then Holly would come out with a paragraph of thought. And we found those to be very pretty. So we used one per day for 366 days, leap year, of course. And it's a book you can order from us, Channeling from the Holy Spirit. And it's a channeling from Holly. Thanks for giving me the chance to clear that up. I would not want anybody to think that you can channel as I do the Confederation without a great deal of careful preparation. What you prepare for is what you're going to get. Let me put it very simply. If you do not live the life that is suggested by your channeling will die. It will stagnate because you're not learning from what you're asking. You have to be learning what you're asking or you won't get any more. You know, it'll dry up. So you have to be focused on what is being suggested to you to do, not go to the doctor today or do this or do that, but be this and be that. You know, how do you live? And you need very much to walk your talk, to live the way you channel. And if you do that, and then if you go through very careful preparation for channeling and treat it with the respect it deserves, it can be of help to people. Otherwise, whatever you had at the beginning is what you're going to have at the end. Because if you do not progress while you're studying a system of thought, whether it's your own or somebody else's, you know, your own channeling or somebody else's, you're not going to get anywhere. You can't just get it for free. You really do need to work. Jim, do you have any comments on that? You've seen me work through, 30, 40 years of life.
Yeah, it's your intention of what you really wish to do that's important. And there's a procedure that you can use to improve that intention and to make it more focused. But it's what you really desire to do, and then to use what you get through the channeling as the fruit of the channeling to continue to grow.
Yeah. Jim, by the way, has a very good skill of channeling, but these days prefers not to for the most part. Although he will when I ask him pretty.
Hey, I'm really sorry to break this wonderful flow, but we are completely out of time.
Oh,
we got, like,
well, thanks
30,
everybody
30
for listening.
Yeah, thanks to both
Come
of
back.
You. Yes, we'll be here next week at next Friday, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, May 4th. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Record. Please visit our website, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. That's bring, the number four, th.org. You can ask questions, and you can download the Law of One and other channeling transcripts. Check it out, llresearch.org. We'll see you next week.